This is a Hat Trick podcast.
Oh, lovely.
Do you remember your sex education? Was it helpful to you? Was it filled with scientific information rather than real, practical advice? I'm Diggory Waite, and this is The Real Sex Education. Each week, I'll be joined by a guest. We'll impart our own sex wisdom, ask our own sex questions, and we'll go over all the things they don't teach you in school. To bring this all together, though, we'll need an expert. A sexpert, if you will. But the only sex and relationship therapist I know is my mum. Hello, Mum.
Hello, Diggs.
In this episode, we speak to comedian Olga Koch about her sex education.
Finally, someone's asking me. I just start talking about it, apropos of nothing.
Coping mechanisms after a breakup.
I made one of my ex-boyfriends out of cake, basically to scale, and then I ate the cake.
And the significance of losing your virginity.
I've been like a horny child my entire life. So the fact that I got to the age of 17 and I was still a virgin was a travesty. And that was the transition from me looking like a person who fucks to being a person who fucks.
Hello and welcome to The Real Sex Education. I'm Diggory Waite and I'm joined as ever by accredited sex and relationship therapist Kate Campbell. Hello, Mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Every week, Mum and I give sex and relationships a good going over with a guest, and this week is no different. We're very glad to be joined by Olga Koch. We have a great chat with Olga coming up later, but Mum, I sent you a BBC article this morning about a certain YouTube superstar named Zoella, who is in a masturbation row with an exam board. AQA, the exam board, have recently stopped linking to her content for a GCSE media studies course because there is a whole range of adult-focused content on there, like a list
of... Sex toys.
Yeah, like a list of the year's best sex toys, yeah. This has basically led to a bit of a conversation about when the right time to start talking honestly about sex, hasn't it, Mum?
It's really annoying that they've stopped using her because... what they could be doing is doubling down on their interest in sex education. They could be saying to parents who've complained, which is apparently what has prompted all of this, they could be saying, but your children need to be educated and it isn't helping for them not to be. If you've decided as parents that the content is too old for them, you're wrong. Because most sex education is coming too late for a lot of people. They've been looking at porn for years, and that is not the way we want our new generations to be getting their sex education, really.
The exam board is arguing that it isn't appropriate for us to ask children as young as 14 to study a website that includes sexual content aimed at adults. And
Did they put it there in the first place then, if they didn't think it was okay?
That's what's interesting, and that's what Zoella says. She says, you know, they clearly didn't look at my stuff well enough because I've been doing this for years. I've covered such a wide range of topics, so they clearly didn't do their research.
I think it's far better to come across this sort of content with a teacher present and the conversation that they're going to have, rather than stumble across it by accident and think, oh, hello, what's this?
It's a problem because it's just denied. Once again, we're just putting it out of the curriculum, pretending it doesn't exist, and we'll push it further down the line. If they say that 14-year-olds are too young to learn about it, and 16-year-olds as well, because it's a GCSE course, well, then when are they going to learn about it? 17 and 18?
When it's too late.
It's too late by that point.
The implication in the article appeared to be that it was because it seemed to promote masturbation.
Pleasure.
The fact that this is going back to, and female pleasure, yes, it's all right for boys, goes back to the dark ages again, where women aren't supposed to have pleasure. And if they do, they should wait until they're older. And what it's actually doing is promoting the idea of penis and vagina sex. The only kind of sex there is intercourse. So actually, parents who phone up and complain or write letters and complain, you are encouraging your daughters to have intercourse at 14 rather than pleasure themselves at 14, which they're probably doing anyway.
When I read this, this instantly came to my mind is the first woman to come on our podcast, episode 2, Jade Adams.
Yes.
One of the first things I asked her was what she wished she'd learnt in her sex ed at school.
I wish a woman would have stood in front of a group of girls and told them how to orgasm. I wish someone, I wish we'd had a class where it was all girls and there was a woman and she came in and she told us all how to come. I wish I'd learned that when I was 15.
That was the first woman we had on the podcast, the very first woman. And that was within like 7 minutes of the episode.
Yeah.
Like, I think this is the thing. Female pleasure in sex ed is pushed down and it's not explored and things are addressed too late or not at all. And I think this is another case of that happening. And clearly, as evidenced by that clip from Jade Adams, it's an important thing that women are coming away wishing they'd learned earlier.
It's a shame, once again, that one or two people complain, and instead of informing them and maybe giving some education to parents, everything's closed down. It's just such a shame. Sorry, exactly. Girls.
Amelia Jenkinson runs the School of Sexuality Education. And Amelia said, from year seven, we might get questions from students like, what's a vibrator and what's a dildo? Mm. These are the questions that pupils really want answered. And it's important we don't shut that down and create a sense of shame. I think that's exactly right.
Absolutely right, yeah.
And later on, we'll have some questions just like that from you, the listeners, and we won't shut those down. No. We won't create a sense of shame, will we, Mum?
No, we will not.
No, we will have an accredited sex therapist answering them to the best of her ability. And she is very ability. She is very able. All right, good. Time for our interview with Olga Koch, in which I began by asking her what her sex education was like.
Oh my goodness, what a wonderful question. I've come prepared. So I was born and raised in Russia. And it's very interesting, like, Russian attitudes towards sex are in some ways extremely conservative and like in the way that you can imagine it, but also because there's this huge hangover from the Soviet Union, and the Soviet Union was decidedly aggressively non-religious. There's a lot of stuff that is sort of like integral to Western society that just doesn't exist in Russia. Like, for example, again, I moved from Russia when I was 13, 14, but I remember back when I was living there, there's not shame around abortion at all whatsoever. It's like readily available. And that's something that was available in the Soviet Union. Yeah, it's weird because it's so like puritanical and conservative in ways like they're very not open-minded towards homosexuality, obviously, but then completely just like chill about, I don't know, the pill and birth control and stuff. So it was a very conflicting situation where we don't talk about it, but we're also quite practical about it. And I remember that I had absolutely nothing. I knew nothing about sex in school. Like there was like an anatomy lesson in biology and that's it. There was no one talked to us about condoms, nothing. My mom gave me a book when I was about 13, and that's all I had.
Oh, what was the book? What was in the book?
So the book was just like some illustrations. Like she just gave it to me, and I remember she was so embarrassed to give it to me. Like she wouldn't look me in the eye. She just sort of like gave me the book and walked away, and I blushed and I laughed, and I was like, I don't need this. I saw the movie Titanic. I know everything I need to know.
Yeah.
And then I remember leafing through it, and it was just a lot of illustrations. I remember they like try, and it like was trying to be whimsical about everything, but then you can't really be whimsical about HIV. So it was just odd to have like illustrations that were like, "Hey," about something as like as heavy as and for difficult for a child to understand.
You know, it's funny you should say that because previous people on this pod have said that their sex education included a little film with astronauts.
Well, yeah, it's almost like the desexualization of sex education when they're like, it's astronauts and illustrations and a condom goes on a banana. And it's like, what are you talking about? These kind of like amorphous ethereal concepts when they're so real life. They're to do with bodies that are sitting in this room right now. Also, speaking of spacesuits, what is a spacesuit if not a full body condom? Think about it.
Well, let's be real.
Also, I would have assumed if they would have a sex ed film full of astronauts, it would be in Russia because we're obsessed with space.
Mm. Yeah.
Missed a trick. First person to get fingered in space. That's my goal.
Oh, I thought you were saying that was you already. That's still
a goal
for the future.
Oh my goodness.
Imagine.
Little girls would be looking up to me and saying they want to follow in my footsteps.
Yeah.
So when I was 14, I moved here to the UK. But it's a very convoluted situation. Moved to the UK. I went to an American high school in the UK, which, again, is just absolute nonsense. Why would anyone do that?
Wow.
And in this American high school in the UK, it was also had like a religious edge. But the religious edge was we never had any like religious classes. But because my understanding is that like we were attached to a church and there was a lot of money in the church, we couldn't do anything that was like directly against the church. So it was like secular, but with a religious twist. So it would be like evolution. And then there would be like question mark in parentheses, like a little cheeky, like, I don't know. Yeah. And so
I just like the idea of, like, you just taught Darwin's theory of evolution and all that stuff. And at the end of the class, the bell rings for lunch. And it's just like, but everything I've just taught you could all be fake. Just a theory.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, guys, out you go. Out you go.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what it was like. And yeah. So we had a sex ed person come in. Like, there was like a school assembly. Everyone was there.
Yeah.
And clearly this sex ed person didn't know there was this like religious edge to this. So it was... The whole thing was like very tongue in cheek, her eyes were rolled the entire time. And she's like, you're not allowed to have sex, but if you were to have sex, and then she would just do her little speech at the end of the, if you were, but you wouldn't. It was just so surreal for us as kids. I mean, kids 14, 15, sitting there being like, what is she trying to tell us? Because it was the most conflicting thing, being like, no. The only way to avoid pregnancy is not to have sex. The next best thing that definitely doesn't work is wear a condom, etc. So yeah, it was just an absolute mind fuck, I would say.
So that shift from Russia to the UK and this bizarre American school that also had this, I mean, that is, you're right, that is convoluted, but like this school sounds quite conservative as well. So then maybe the shift wasn't that crazy, or did you feel it just in general attitudes in the UK as opposed to Russia?
It's a good question. I just feel like there's such different attitudes. So in Russia, there's one attitude. In the UK, I think there's another attitude. In the US, there's another. And it felt like throughout my childhood, I went through different stages and each of them made me paranoid about a different thing. Like, for example, I think in Russia, I was like obsessed with, I guess, like honor and sluttiness. And then I remember when I moved to the US, in the US, the sex education in regards to STDs is so aggressive. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard of like gonorrhea or chlamydia or anything when I was in Russia. And in America, my understanding, again, pseudoscience, I have no idea what I'm talking about. But my understanding is that like pharmaceutical companies are so strong in America that they like amp up STDs. Like, fear around herpes in Europe versus fear around herpes in the US are night and day. Everybody in America is horrified of herpes. And so, like, if in Russia I was afraid to be called a slut, in America I was afraid of herpes. Like, every surface was potentially like herpes central. Like, there's all these things where it's just like you're not sure about, and it's like, is every rash that I have on my pussy herpes? Don't answer that. And so it's there's just all cultures are conservative in some ways. The ways are just different.
And what were you afraid of in the UK? What was the paranoia there? What did we give you?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a really, really good question.
We must have given you something.
But what are people in the UK afraid of?
Wow. Each other. Yeah. Yeah.
Looking each other in the eye when having sex. Yeah. I think what people are in the UK are just any vocal acknowledgement of the fact that sex is being had while having sex.
Yes. Mm. Yes, yes. That's why the idea of dirty talk, like, that's just not, that can't happen. That's insane.
British men also are horrified of coming. Every single one just what? Is horrid. Once they do, they're like, oh my God, I'm so sorry.
I feel like whenever they've come, whether it's, you know, within a minute or within an hour, they're like, oh, it's too soon. It's too soon. They weren't ready. I wasn't ready. I should have been able to go until next Wednesday. You mentioned losing your virginity when you went to college. How was becoming a...
How big was his dick? Okay.
How big was it? That's all I want to know. That's what I want to know right now. How was shifting from the various backgrounds that you had? What was the transition like to becoming sort of sexually active?
Okay, so I won't say that my experience is universal. I will say that my experience is an experience that definitely exists and needs to be talked about. I was desperate to lose my virginity in high school. It felt like I had a mark on my forehead and I needed to get rid of it. I needed to scrub it off because I have always been a very like sexual girl in that like I would make sex jokes all the time. I would love watching sex comedies. Like, I was a class clown and it would always be like very sexual. I've been like a horny child my entire life. So the fact that I got to the age of 17 and I was still a virgin was a travesty, to the point where it's like it didn't fit with who I was. It was like it just didn't make sense. It didn't fit into the personality that I've built for myself. And so when I arrived at university, I was like, first week, I was like, we gotta take care of this. There's absolutely no way that I will continue being a virgin. Yeah, it was just like, it was a branding that I had to scrub off of myself.
And then when you eventually had sex, did you feel that the branding had been taken off? Did you feel this like euphoria or?
God, I wish it was that. It wasn't euphoria. It was like, oh God, it was like when you lie on your resume and it's like technically true, or you like try and make it true in retrospect. Like that's how it felt. It felt like I never said I've had sex. You just implied it. I never corrected you. And like, that's the area that I was living in. And then I finally was like, okay, well, all these people that I told I wasn't a virgin to in the last year, I'm officially not a virgin, so it's fine.
So yeah, so they're not lies anymore. Technically, exactly. It's fine.
I don't know if this is relatable, but this was the mental fortress that I've built for myself.
I think that is relatable. I think we've had people on the podcast already who said that, yeah, they built up this massive thing in their head, because I think virginity is a big deal, even though it's like kind of made up, like it doesn't really mean anything. But you do just, it's just this rite of passage that we place so much weight on.
Yes, and I think I agree with you. It's just the way that is portrayed in the media a lot of the time, that it's like it has to do with like it being special or something. I don't look back at that night ever. It doesn't, and I, like, it doesn't mean anything to me. What meant a lot to me was that I was portraying myself to the outside world as a person who fucks, and I needed that to become true, and that was the transition from me looking like a person who fucks to being a person who fucks.
Do you think you've been properly prepared for the experience, though, through, you know, either your formal sex education or just your life?
I guess that's a good question. I feel like what was really important to me, and in retrospect, having gone through like a huge feminist journey with Me Too and everything happening and kind of coming into my own and realizing what it is that I want, or something that I was influenced by the outside world to want, what I would tell myself now is I would have really wanted to have sex in that moment. I didn't want to be pressured. I didn't want to be doing something because I felt like I had to. And in that moment, I can like hand on my heart, say, I really wanted it. And that is the thing that I'm happy and content with.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But in terms of your virginity and that thing, I'm just wondering then if that wasn't so brilliant, where your love of teenagers came from. And you haven't just said this once. You've said this in a few places, including you've sung a song, an entire song about it. I would implore people to check it out. It's brilliant.
Hell yeah.
So I'm just wondering if that didn't come from college, where did it come from?
Okay, so I'll tell you how this started.
Yeah.
At the age of 23, 24, I dated a guy who was 19. And so I have very meticulously built my life and persona and comedy persona as a person who's in charge. And I think like even the anecdote about me losing my virginity, it was important that I was in control. I was like, we're going to do this. And we did it. And then I was like, yes. So I was in control of the narrative. I felt like I was in power. And I felt like, again, I'm not talking about like domination, but it's just something that like to have a lot of authority and to kind of like self-determination. And so it was like a fun thing to be like, oh my God, I'm dating a younger guy. And like, I buy him little treats and he just like walks around and he like thinks that everything I say is so funny and clever and cool. I was like, oh, this is super fun to talk about because the dynamic is flipped, because we see so many older men dating younger women. What is it like to be like, oh, well, I have a boy toy. I will say that when I was 23, 24, talking about it was like fine, because at the end of the day, we were like 4 years apart. It's really not a big deal. When it comes back to me when I'm 28, it's a bit creepier. And I do feel the need to tell everyone that I don't date teenagers anymore. One of the reasons was being, of course, like the power dynamic started becoming creepy. And I also decided that I wanted to start enjoying sex.
I am very sorry about you being reminded of it constantly. I mean, how does it compare to people bringing up the fact that you ate your ex-boyfriend out of cake?
Oh my goodness.
That's what I've also got written down.
This is just a walk down memory lane.
Yeah, it really is.
So I will explain what that is.
Please do.
There's a video on the internet called Olga Has Her Cake. And it's a funny little mockumentary about how I made one of my ex-boyfriends out of cake, basically to scale, and then I ate the cake. hilarity ensues.
Indeed.
Again, this is going to be a really pompous explanation, but At the time, I was very into feminist literature. I was also into contemporary artists, specifically Sophie Cal. And I love how Sophie Cal essentially owns her vulnerability. I'm also just obsessed with women being shamed for like being vulnerable or clingy or obsessive. And then I'm obsessed with women who take ownership of that obsession and vulnerability and clinginess. Women who are like, I am crazy, I am clingy, I am obsessive, what the fuck are you going to do about it? And I mean, even someone like You Ought to Know by Alanis Morissette is the anthem to that. Be like, is she perverted like me? Will she go down on you in a theater? The idea that like, I don't care if you think that I'm obsessed. I don't care if you think that I'm clingy. You can't shame me. I feel what I feel and I'm taking ownership of that. And I was just mesmerized by these women because I, for all of my teens and my entire life, has spent my life being like the cool girl, trying to be chill, trying to be one of the boys, trying to be laid back, being like, I don't care. I don't give a shit. And it was so sobering and inspiring to see all these cool women being like, I do care. What are you going to do about it? I am obsessed. What are you going to do about it? And so it felt so almost liberating to be like, I am obsessed. I'm obsessed to the point where I'll make you out of cake and I'll eat you. And I don't care if you say I'm obsessed. And I don't care if you say I'm clingy. Because at the end of the day, this pressure to act chill and laid back is just internalized misogyny and acknowledgement of the patriarchy. And fuck that. Thank you.
Oh, wow.
I feel like we should have, yes, exactly, applause. Yeah.
I mean, it's not as pompous as I've just made it out to be.
Oh, it really is a woman just eating an baking a man out of cake, eating his eclair, penis, and shoving the rest of his legs in your face. And you donated the torso to a local school, is that right? You couldn't quite finish the
cake. Where did you get that information? I don't even remember where I put that information.
Hey, look, you're the guest.
I genuinely have no idea where you got that.
Is that right?
It is true.
Yeah.
Because it was like a huge sheet cake, and I was like, I can't do this.
And you're like, it's only the torso. Nothing weird is going on here. This is fine. Just eat my ex out of cake, please. Did you have like a really important piece of sex education, maybe, or anything like that, that you took forward? Anything that was most effective when you became sexually active?
Ooh, that's an excellent question. It will be a long answer.
Oh, good.
That won't make a lot of sense. So, if I watch the movie now, it will probably be really cringy and problematic. But at the time, it really helped. And I don't want to rewatch it because I don't want to see all the holes and problems with it. Mm. The movie is called Chasing Amy. And it's crazy because it's like, it's a film by Kevin Smith who made like Mallrats and like all these films where you're like, what? Why? And then this is like, I suppose, the most intellectual one that he's ever made. And it's called Chasing Amy. And it's kind of based on his own experience. And it's about this guy who dates a lesbian. And the lesbian is like, you're the first man I've ever dated. And he's like very excited by it. But then the second he finds out that she's actually has had sex with men in the past, he starts slut shaming her. And this idea that he was like really excited and like even turned on by the idea of the fact that she had sex with all these women before. But then the second there was a man, he started slut shaming her. And also the idea that like this like power trip that he had from like flipping a lesbian. And I remember watching it and it's just absolutely blowing my mind. Cause obviously like in the end, he's the bad guy, which is great. Always on board with that. And so I think that as like, I watched it when I was maybe 18, 19 and just being like, oh, all of this is completely made up. There are no rules. It's all arbitrary. Mm. The idea that like having sex with some people is fine and the other makes you a slut, that's just made up. None of that is true. None of it is factual. None of this is backed by science. You can't like check it in a lab. Nothing happens. There's no laws against this. It's really just something that someone made up and now feels emboldened to act out in life when in reality, it's all just fucking imaginary.
Yeah.
One of the things that I would also change about my sex education and everybody's sex education is apart from obviously opening it outside of just being straight people having straight sex, opening it to all sexual orientations. That's extremely important because obviously it's very confusing and alienating for people who want to have sex other than straight sex. And also, if you're not exposed to it, you don't know that you like it. Like, I think the fact that I, as a kid, basically was only ever exposed to man dominating woman in bed as the only power dynamic that existed meant that I was like, I guess I want that because that's the only thing I've ever seen. And so the fact that like, Even pegging coming into the mainstream recently is so exciting because I genuinely didn't know about pegging until someone told me about pegging. And once I saw it, I was like, oh, that's cool. And so much about sex has to do with like knowing that it's an option. Some of this stuff is never going to occur to you. You need to be told, be like, yeah, this exists and it's cool and it's normal and you should try it. So not only would I open up like who's having sex, but also how they're having it. And that would be very, very exciting for me as a kid to have known about and not to find out as an old 28-year-old woman. And also it's just exciting to be exposed to more of a bigger variety of sexual dynamics other than man pins woman to a wall. And that's like all I see on TikTok, which makes me really upset because I'm like, this is fine, but give me other stuff too. This is not the only thing that exists.
How do you manage to get sex against the wall on TikTok? Because all I get is people eating beetroot and squeezing spots. I keep not liking it and it keeps coming back. I've never had any sex against the wall on TikTok at all. It's just so sad.
Mum, you don't want that. Please don't tell me you want that.
That would make a change from the beetroot and spots.
I don't know. Maybe I'm in the wrong part of TikTok. Maybe like I'm only seeing that like male doms TikTok, but I hate it. Like, do it, fine, do it in the privacy of your own room, but it's like nerdy like 17-year-old boys pretending to choke girls and like fedoras.
God, no,
it's so cringe.
Oh, I don't want that.
Yesterday I got an account that was like a Disney weight loss account and I was like, I can't believe this is what people think I am. This is the bucket that the advertisers have put me in.
Disney weight loss.
And it's like a woman counting her steps while walking around Disneyland.
You're kidding. That's hilarious. My God.
Do you know what? That actually sounds... Mum, I know you'd like that, Mum, wouldn't you?
Well, actually, yeah. Yeah.
You're a big Disney World fan, so you'd love that.
Why don't I get that?
You'd love that.
Yeah. Is it a pimples?
You guys should swap phones. I think that's the only way.
We should.
And I love beetroot. I'm Russian.
Oh, yes, yeah, of course.
Well, it was funny as well what you were saying before about pegging. Just to quickly switch that back. Because
hello,
I also sensed that happening. And again, I feel like it's also on TikTok. There's a lot of videos about pegging on TikTok and stuff. And I saw it the other day, someone doing a genuine post being like, guys, this whole pegging thing, do you think that this is all a joke or are people actually into that? Because I think I'm into that. And I don't know. I mean, is this a joke?
Okay, pegging has been happening for... age for like as long as the history of time since people found out they have prostates.
But what I mean is it going to be shot more into the mainstream and more people going to be doing it at the moment? Because I feel like that's what I'm understanding and that's what I'm hearing.
Well, you'd think definitely. Wouldn't you? It takes a while to change a habit, but if you keep talking about it, it sounds as if it's in the mainstream, even if it's not.
I think the biggest lie that we are told and the biggest cognitive dissonance about sex is the idea that like you like what you like and you're born with it. And it's like, no, we are constantly shaped by the outside world. People who are found attractive is because advertising keeps putting them on billboards and covers of magazines. So the idea that like you were born with this specific kink, like, yeah, sometimes that's true. But a lot of the time it's like you stumbled upon it on like a late night session on Pornhub and you're like, feet. OK. I think desire is malleable and it is shaped by media constantly. So I truly believe that any power dynamic can become popular if we're just exposed to it.
Have you tried pegging?
Me? Yes, obviously. I wouldn't just like say it out of.
I knew you'd be perfect for this podcast.
I wasn't just going to say that it's fun without having... Come on, guys. I do my field research.
Now you're making me want to do it for research.
You gotta.
Right? I mean, I'm not a proper producer, presenter guy unless I do this stuff too.
Yeah, but you know, when you get straight couples coming and talking about anal intercourse, and I often say to the guy, right, so we're going to try some pegging first so you know what it's like before you... And they go, what? Oh, I don't want to do it. Oh, no. Oh, no, no, it's her. No, I don't want to do it.
That's exactly what I'm thinking. I'm like, if you're not prepared to be pegged, then you should not be prepared to do anal. I think that's fair enough.
Yep. And which one has a prostate up their butt? That's my precisely. Question.
Exactly. So that's what I'm saying. Peg me. Maybe. No. Yes. Yes.
Oh, my God. You're like kombucha girl. You're like,
Olga, at the end of each episode, we like to ask our guests, how was it for you and was it good for you too?
That's so good. Yes, absolutely. I've loved every minute of it. It's really humbling to be around actual sex experts.
Oh, it's well, been so nice.
Sex experts. I am. I'm definitely not a sex expert on any level.
Oh, it's been great to have you on the show. It's brilliant. It's really, really interesting.
And one of the things about this show is we want to try and give people, you know, actionable sex advice. So if there's anything from our chat today that you could like sum up or give one piece of advice, what would it be for people going forward?
Oh, God. Do what you want, but make sure it's actually what you want.
Oh, I like that. Excellent advice. Deep. Yes.
And try pegging.
Why not?
Fine. Excellent. Olga, thank you so much again.
Thank you very, very, very much. Have a wonderful day. Thank you.
It's the mailbag. Send Kate your queries to podcast@hatch.com. It's the mailbag. Send Kate your queries. Podcast@hatchick.com.
Hello there. I have a query for Kate. I would like to know when the real sex education mailbag starts.
The real sex education mailbag starts right now.
Thank you.
Thank you so much again to Olga. That was such a good chat. It was brilliant. Right, now it's time for some of the questions that you sent in to us via email, podcasts@hatchick.com, or using the #RealSexEDU. And whilst we're on the subject, why don't you follow us on Twitter as well? We now have a Twitter account. It's @RealSexEdPod. So check that out and give us a follow as well. And obviously, if you have any questions, like the ones we've got coming up, you can DM them to us now, as our DMs are open. Right. The first question is from Amelia, who says, I'm 20 weeks pregnant and so horny, but my husband doesn't want to have sex because he's scared he'll hurt the baby. What do I do?
Oh, well, talk to him about this. Get him to listen to this podcast because it's normal to feel more horny during pregnancy. Some people feel less, some people feel more horny, and for some people orgasms are easier to achieve and they just generally feel a lot more sexy and relaxed. So nothing bad can happen. There's no way that you can harm the baby unless you've been told not to have sex by a medical professional. There's no problem at all.
How do we allay the fears then of the husband?
Well, reassure him of this. And I think if you Google anything at all about it, about pregnancy, or talk to the midwife, then you'll discover that there really isn't an issue with sex in pregnancy. It's fun. It's common. And it's equally, there isn't a problem with people who don't feel horny. I mean, if he's absolutely worried sick and really, really won't have sex, then you're left to your own devices. But actually, the chances are, if he's reassured, he'll feel better. But on the whole, there's no reason not to have intercourse if you want to, or any other kind of sex, really.
And are there any let's say for intercourse, are there any sort of positions that would be extra safe?
Well, no, they wouldn't be extra safe, but they might be more comfortable. And so at 20 weeks there probably isn't a problem with any position at the moment, but once she gets bigger, then problems may develop in terms of it being very uncomfortable. Obviously, you don't want to lie on the bump. So sometimes it's more comfortable for the woman to be on top once she gets bigger, although, you know, she might not have much energy at that point if she's bouncing around. Sometimes kneeling on pillows can be very helpful for a kind of doggy position. But again, you've got to be really careful when I say kneeling on pillows, you're not putting pressure on the baby. And also you want to fairly shallow thrusts, probably would be more comfortable. And lying side by side is very comfortable. And you can also, again, put cushions under the bump. So side by side with your left knee up or your right knee up, whichever is on the outside, sort of bent, can be very, very comfortable as well if you're really big. But once the head engages, intercourse can be quite uncomfortable for some people. So maybe then you wouldn't want to.
But unless you've been told by a professional not to, then it is safe. The baby will be okay. Just take it slow and easy and work with what's comfortable.
Because the baby's bouncing around in a little sack, and so it won't know what you're doing, and it can't it can't feel it, or it's not going to stick a hand out and say hello.
Oh my word.
People have all sorts of fantasies about that sort of thing happening, but it just doesn't.
Yeah, and it won't know what's going on, so don't worry, AQA or any other exam board. You don't have to get rid of this. It's all good. Well, the next question is from Anonymous, who says, I have an embarrassing problem that when I'm aroused, some fluid comes out of my penis. Sometimes are worse than others, but this can be embarrassing. Should I be concerned? Mum, is that an open and shut case? Oh, in my head, that's just pre-cum.
Right. Okay, Diggs, you answer the question.
So I have it on good authority that there is something called the prostate, which is a gland that excretes a liquid that sort of keeps the tubes connected from your testicles to the end of your penis.
Wow, this is getting technical.
It's keeping them lubricated because obviously you're not coming all the time. Well, most of us aren't. So otherwise it would dry up. So it keeps them lubricated. I don't know what the word is for that, but we call it pre-cum because then when you do get aroused, some of that lubricant comes out of the end of your penis. And so that's what I imagine is happening here.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, the pre-cum comes from the Cowper's glands, which are in the same vicinity as the prostate. And what they do is do some lubrication. And also, actually, they're a little antiseptic. They're sort of cleaning. But they do sometimes contain semen. So you do, if you're producing a lot of this, then you need to be a little bit careful. If you're not using contraception, or put on a condom as early as possible if it's starting to appear early on in your lovemaking before you could get on your hands or get near to your partner.
And it says, when I'm aroused, some fluid comes out of my penis. Sometimes are worse than others, and it can be embarrassing. Is there any reason why more or less would come out?
No, sometimes it's to do with how recently you've ejaculated or maybe how aroused you are, obviously, if you're very aroused. And I'm imagining that this person is concerned about staining clothes and things like this. But it may be that they're concerned about it happening at all. But as you say, it's normal and it's not something that you should be worried about at all. The only time you should be worried is if it smells, if it's an unusual colour, not normal for you. Or there's pain associated with it, something like that.
Yeah, and if it's happening when you're not aroused and you've never been aroused, because then I think something might be leaking when it shouldn't be.
Yes, quite, yes, absolutely.
Excellent. Well, that's it then. Series 2 has reached its climax, Mum.
Oh, what a way to end.
Indeed. Thank you so much if you've listened to all 10 episodes and the bonus ones as well. Hopefully, we'll have more for you very soon. Thank you to Olga and all of the guests this series. They've all been absolutely brilliant. A big thank you to Hattrick Podcast, specifically Claire and Andy. Thank you guys for what you do in making this podcast. Yeah, what it is. We really appreciate it. Mum, last but not least, thank you for your company, your humour, and your wisdom.
Oh, thank you, Diggs, for being Diggs.
Thanks, Mum. If you want more from us, you can follow us on Twitter. Once again, it's @RealSexEdPod, and you can be kept up to date with what we're up to there. You can also listen to the whole back catalogue of the podcast, Series 1 and Series 2. If there's episodes you've missed, you can go back and listen to them there. And make sure you're subscribed to us or following us wherever you're listening to this podcast now so you don't miss out when we release Series 3. See you then for some more real sex education. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Real Sex Education, which is hosted by Diggory Waite and Kate Campbell. The show is produced by Diggory Waite, and the executive producer is Andy Goddard. The Real Sex Education is a Hattrick podcast. This podcast is based on the real-life relationship between Diggory Waite and his mother, accredited sex therapist Kate Campbell. The show is therefore inspired by, but otherwise unrelated to, the TV show Sex Education. But yes, Diggory does wish his mother was played by Gillian Anderson.